This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Heart Greens. Helping to support healthy blood pressure and circulation just became hassle-free. Introducing Heart Greens, the functional food that you drink, using the same dark leafy greens recommended by both the DASH and Mediterranean diets. Get a free canister of Heart Greens with your first order and a 100% money-back guarantee. Heart Greens even guarantees you'll love the taste. Call 800-951-8940. That's 800-951-8940. Or visit IntelligentGreens.com. That's IntelligentGreens.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's my favorite time of the week because I get to visit with Hoffman Center Nutritionist. Not that I don't talk to her several times a day at the Hoffman Center, but we get to sit down and field your questions. She, of course, is Layla Mutin. She's a registered dietitian, and she also possesses a master's degree in the field of nutrition. How you doing, Layla?
I'm okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good, good. And I'm very excited because I just learned about a very amazing milestone. And, you know, we sit here and, you know, we don't have an audience because we have to imagine our audience. And for all we know, there could be like, you know, as many people as you count on one hand. We just sort of imagine throngs of people listening to these podcasts. And this week, our suspicions were validated because we have reached the extraordinary milestone of 3 million downloads.
Oh my goodness.
Of our Intelligent Medicine podcast. Okay?
Million.
Million.
Wow.
Million. So what that means, and this, I hearken back to a couple of years ago. It's been about 2.5 years since we began this podcast series. At which point I said, look, this is going to be a grand experiment because I think things are changing. I'm still on radio, but we're moving more to a voluntary listening phase where instead of people having to make an appointment at a certain time to listen to the radio and, you know, whether they not they have a radio station within range where they can pull in the signal, we're now in a new era where more and more people are listening to this new thing called podcasts. Podcasts emerged as a genre over the last 5 years. I said, let's get in the game and let's just put out information. And it's catching on. It's catching on like wildfire. We're getting comments from not just all over the country, but from all over the world. Because through the miracle of the internet, people can subscribe to these podcasts as, say, a language lesson. You know, they listen, you know, in all continents of the world. And this is hopefully providing people with a wonderful free resource about health.
Yes.
So we're very excited. Thank you.
That is very exciting. Yeah.
Thank you to our 3 million downloaders. Now, that doesn't mean that we have 3 million listeners. It means that a core group of perhaps tens of thousands of people, hopefully, you know, maybe into the hundreds of thousands, have downloaded one or more podcasts. It's either some people who are faithful listeners, they may have downloaded 100 podcasts, so their vote, you know, counts 100 times.
Yeah. Oh, that's very exciting. I thank everyone for listening. That's very, very gratifying.
Indeed.
Yeah. Wow.
So we won't cancel today's podcast because, you know, because the news came back, it's like nobody's listening. We'd say, okay, it's all off. We're not going to.
Oh, my gosh. And speaking from around the world.
Okay.
We've got an email from Sweden. Dear Dr. Hoffman, my son Jacob is 21 years old. He's had to quit his studies at university due to losing 25 pounds over a couple of months, as well as being exhausted, being able to hardly eat anything. He had a colonoscopy at a hospital in Stockholm.
Which is one of the first things you do. I mean, you've got to, you know, you see this kind of weight loss and you start playing what's called the rule out game. And that, and conventional medicine is good at that. We can rule out a very serious disease, like God forbid he has cancer. You know, colon cancer might present as extreme weight loss. So, or ulcerative colitis or something like that, which is a common cause of sudden weight loss in young people.
Right.
And okay, so what happened?
So he had a colonoscopy in Stockholm. They found inflammation in three places in his intestines.
Bingo. Bingo.
So there we go.
Yeah.
Well, Jacob's father says, so we had to go back to rice.
No.
To eating rice to no. for the colons no. to have a chance to heal.
So it's yeah. so it's interesting. It just I just saw a patient today mm-hmm. who is the significant other of a patient that I saw. He tells me 20 years ago, I barely recognized him, but he tells me that he saw me 20 years ago for his ulcerative colitis. And I put him on a program at that time. And that's why he brought his lady friend in, because he said, I have cured his ulcerative colitis. He's in full remission. He came in with, you know, gastrointestinal bleeding. And this is through the power of diet and certain yes. protective supplements.
Yes.
And so, you know, this has been something I've been doing for decades. It's extraordinarily powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Some patients respond partially. Some patients respond as completely with complete recovery and remission.
That's true.
Some patients require medication for a while.
Right.
But yeah, rice is not part of the program.
Rice is not part of the program. And I want to say to, it's actually Jacob's mother, not Jacob's father. I apologize for that. The way to go is not that. And I don't know why yet. I don't see this as a more mainstream therapeutic diet. This is true medical nutrition therapy, in my experience, or for as long as I've been working here, Dr. Hoffman. Mm-hmm. The specific carbohydrate diet has been quite amazing in my experience with a lot of our patients
yep.
with Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, and they do not include anything like grains.
Yep.
Why do people go back to rice? Rice is...
Well, it's gluten-free, so they think
it's gluten-free. It's practically hypoallergenic.
Right.
That's why it
helps with diarrhea.
It helps with diarrhea.
Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
So they do it for this reason as a bland
yeah.
type
mm-hmm.
of food. But really, on specific carbohydrate diet, not having any grains at all, and being wary of some very starchy carbohydrates like potatoes, soybeans, things of that nature, or beans, even in the very beginning, is very, very helpful. No sugars, no milk, because there's sugar in there too. It's called lactose. People do very, very well. They often go into remission on this type of an eating plan. And I've seen people go into remission 3 weeks later and a year and a half later.
Mm-hmm.
It is,
it takes
it
some
really
time.
Spans.
It can take some time.
Depending
and,
on.
And the key is changing the microbiome. We want to alter the balance of bacteria and fungus.
Yes.
There recently was a study on Crohn's disease, which implicates a fungus in its Candida tropicalis. You know, we've been talking about the yeast connection for ages in relation to gastrointestinal problems. And now, well, full confirmation that Candida tropicalis, which is a species of yeast, may play a role in Crohn's disease. And it coexists with a type of bad bacteria called Serratia marcescens, which is a nasty bacteria that may, you know, have a nice synergy with this harmful fungal species in the mm-hmm. gastrointestinal tract. And it sets up inflammation and it sets up intolerance and creates a, you know, an immune reaction.
Yeah. Fascinating. Wow.
Okay, so the diet, then mm-hmm. there are certain supplements. You know, we would recommend curcumin. We would recommend boswellan to our patients, a higher dose of vitamin D.
Fish oil.
Certainly in a Scandinavian country, that could be an issue. Fish oil, usually not such a problem in those countries because they consume a lot of oily fish, although perhaps some people don't. And so there's a program that you can follow. And
many patients have benefited from prescription low-dose naltrexone.
Low-dose naltrexone is excellent. And it may be hard to get in Europe.
Yeah.
This is Denmark.
This is Sweden.
Sweden. Okay,
mm-hmm.
but it's likely that it's available in the UK. So a little traveling, a little ingenuity, and you might be able to get a prescription.
Yeah. So to Jacob's mother and to Jacob, we wish you well. But definitely look into the specific carbohydrate diet. The book by the late Elaine Gottschall is Breaking the Vicious Cycle. And if you go to breakingtheviciouscycle.info, it'll tell you there mm-hmm. how to get started.
By the way, for so long, the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation has resisted the idea that diet could be therapeutic. However, they have just approved a small trial looking at the SCD for, I believe it's Crohn's disease.
Okay.
And they're going to do the trial. Why are they doing the trial? Not because they thought of it. It's because they were pressured by patients.
Mm-hmm.
Patient advocates said, look, you guys got to do...
You got to get on the ball.
Get on the ball with this because, you know, you're promoting the use of powerful drugs
mm-hmm.
and, you know, essentially representing the interests of the pharmaceutical industry, give us a balanced approach. Talk to us about some dietary options. And finally, they're opening up the window just a little bit on therapeutic diets.
Right, right. And I just want a little nod and a note to my colleagues out there who are nutritionists. It's great. I often see, like, on our listservs and things, how we're, you know, getting advice from each other and trying to take the best care of our patients that we can. I see a lot of nutritionists starting on a gluten-free, dairy-free, which is great, but if you find that it's not taking them all the way, and I've often seen that it doesn't really take you all the way in the case of UC and Crohn's, it's really worth your while to really dig into the specific carbohydrate
and
diet.
You know, as a strategy in working with patients with a serious disorder, you know, some people say, well, I'm going to try some incremental steps with diet. First, we'll get rid of sugar, and we'll maybe then we'll get rid of gluten, and we'll, you know, then we'll experiment with dairy. I say, with a serious health problem, hit the patient is, you've got their attention. It's a teachable moment. They have bloody diarrhea, and they're faced with possibility of being on immunosuppressive medication or having their colon removed.
And anemic, and,
insist that they try a 90-day trial of the specific carbohydrate diet. Mm-hmm. And which point, I think you're going to have a patient who, if they fully comply, they're going to want to do it themselves because they won't be able to deny the efficacy of that diet, as inconvenient and restrictive as it is. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, you only have a finite time to work with the patients. If you say, over a year, we'll roll out this, we'll roll out that, you'll lose their
prolonging your misery, where at that point, 6 months into just being gluten-free, you're fed up.
Yeah,
you're not motivated anymore.
And behaviorally, it's we only have a finite amount of time to make a big impression on the patient.
Yes.
It's just human nature. And so we'll get it right in there and say, do it. Try it.
Yeah. Other things I want to mention that the specific carbohydrate diet is wonderful for is intractable diarrhea.
Diverticulitis.
Wow.
By the way, just a
we've arrested diverticulitis in some of our patients.
So you want to hear the latest is they just did a trial in a hospital setting where patients were admitted with acute diverticulitis. Now, of course, that's an infection of a diverticulum, which is an outpocketing. And, of course, that calls for antibiotics. Yeah. Well, what they did in this study was they said, let's give half the group antibiotics and let's give half the group no antibiotics. We'll just give them, you know, light diet and hydrate them so that they don't become dehydrated. Mm-hmm. And we'll observe them, and once they're better, we'll send them home. Well, what happened was interesting because the group that got antibiotics actually spent more time in hospital than the group that was just observed.
Wow.
This is a double-blind placebo control. They didn't know what they were getting. They just hooked them up to an IV. They said, you're getting something or nothing in this experiment.
No power of suggestion.
Right.
No placebo.
Look, there are certainly instances where antibiotics can be helpful in that condition, but, you know, this really overturns one of our long-cherished scientific and medical verities, which is that diverticulitis requires antibiotic therapy in every instance.
Yeah.
Can I backtrack a little bit? Because we usually start off these Intelligent Medicine podcasts with a little commentary on this week's news.
Oh, yes.
And I can't pass up the opportunity to comment on a story this week in, well, it was actually last week for some of your listeners, in the New York Times, which is the Jane Brody column, Jane Brody column.
Every
headline,
Tuesday.
Studies show little benefit in supplements.
Oh, no.
And what they're saying is big article that says that most of the studies say that supplements are not beneficial. Why, oh, why are so many people persisting in taking supplements? And my comment on that is, how can the New York Times get two things wrong in the same month?
Yeah.
Number one, their election prognostications.
That's right.
So, you know, they actually wrote an apology to their readers saying, we'll try to get it right next time. But then they come out with this article on supplements that flies directly in the face of what a lot of people experience and what a lot of people know. So I'm going to do a more detailed pushback on that article because I think it requires a little bit more criticism. I actually, in my newsletter article this week, we talked about a vitamin D editorial in the New York Times which said that, you know, most people really don't need more vitamin D. We're exaggerating the vitamin D deficiency thing. But, you know, you can read that separately. But I'll just read you a comment from, there are 80 comments here, and I would wager that about 75% of them are pushing back against the assertion that studies show little benefit in supplements. Steve from Philadelphia writes, "What a bunch of big pharma propaganda."
Thank you, Steve.
Look at the study history of that main author, by the way, who is, his name is Peter Cohen. Mm-hmm. He's been paid hundreds of thousands of dollars by big pharma. And this article writer cherry picks negative studies to prove her, quote, point. Glucosamine chondroitin ineffective? Ha. Merck did its own study, never published, hoping to show Vioxx was better for arthritic knees. Result? The supplement combo was far and away more effective at increasing MJSW. I'm not sure what that stands for. That's
multi-joint.
Multi-joint something something.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, probably.
Yeah.
And decreasing pain. Thus the suppression of that data. When you read junk science like this, keep in mind who benefits. Is it the few $100 million supplement market or the $500 billion blockbuster drug market?
Yeah.
He concludes, the Times should stop writing about this subject until it can be objective. And, you know, I gotta say that the Times has been, there's been a steady drumbeat in the Times in particular, but, you know, some other major publications pushing back against supplements, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
The Times is so open-minded.
We know why.
Why?
The big pharma machine.
Is it that the reporters go to cocktail parties and hang out with,
maybe,
you know, pharmaceutical executives? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe.
But they're adding more fuel to the fire in misreporting. And unfortunately, you know, Jane Brody went to school with one of my college professors, whom I won't name.
Give me the inside, man.
And, well, no, apparently, I mean, it was just, wow, you went to school with Jane Brody, you know,
right,
back in the day or something.
Right.
But again, we're talking about integrity in science. Here's a credentialed nutritionist who's not reading the fine print. She's not reading the methodology. She's just going, falling in line with the pharma speak or the anti-supplement propaganda. Can we just call it what it is? I mean, the integrity in news reporting, we know, has gone way down in the last couple of decades, in my estimation.
I think, I don't want to knock Jane Brody, because I think she's a good science reporter, and
mm-hmm.
she has brought up some important issues,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know that she is a nutritionist. Is she?
I believe she is. I think she's a... correct me if I'm wrong, anybody listening. I think she's a PhD in nutrition.
I'm trying to look up her
ED.
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
I think she's a journalist. And, you know, so that, which doesn't necessarily disqualify her from covering this subject, because
no.
I think she's well versed in science, but I think there's a little bit of a bias.
Especially about supplements.
Jane Brody is the personal health columnist for the New York Times. She joins the Times as a specialist in medicine and biology after completing degrees in biochemistry and science writing.
Okay.
At the New York State College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at Cornell University and the University of Wisconsin School of Journalism. And she did a 2-year stint as a reporter for the Minneapolis Tribune. She, however, has no formal medical or nutrition credentials.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So,
but a science writer.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about Gary Taubes for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And his integrity,
well,
loads.
We happen to agree. We happen to agree with him.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, if you're a medical writer,
also a former New York Times writer,
yes,
and reporter,
mm-hmm.
Who, you know, if people don't know who Gary Taubes is, he's the guy who blew the whistle on the our infatuation with low carb diets,
mm-hmm.
and has written very extensively and eruditely about the fallacies in the low carb. I mean, the low-fat.
In the low-fat diet.
The low-fat
right.
Diet argument.
He blew the whistle
argument.
On the low-fat
diet.
Diets,
yeah.
Yeah.
Did I say low-carb?
Yeah.
I might
yeah.
have said low.
Yeah.
He's a proponent of lower-carb diets. Anyway, I will try and do a detailed pushback against that particular story, which is kind of like, you know, a little bit our mission statement here to provide a different perspective on some of these mainstream stories. And that's one of the reasons why maybe we don't have the circulation of the Times, but, you know, we have a bit of a following from people who are saying, what's an alternative interpretation of some of these stories that get blandly repeated in the mainstream media?
Right. We're kind of left holding the bag to put out any fires or elucidate what's going on here to clarify.
Yeah. It's called damage control.
It's damage control, but it's also bringing integrity to the interpretation.
Yeah.
What was misinterpreted to interpret it correctly. And you know, I'm encouraged with over 3 million downloads. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're going to have the subscriber base.
I will say this in particular is this notion that supplements in some broad category can be either good or bad is a fallacy. That'd be like saying drugs are bad.
Right.
Drugs are bad.
And that's not true.
Well, and many drugs are, but many drugs are magnificent, life-saving, essential tools in our medical repertoire. And similarly with supplements, so we can't really say, even though there may be some supplements that fall short of their promise, let's argue, at least, let's stipulate that that's the case. It's such a fallacy to tackle a whole category of interventions, this whole magnificent category of many, many thousands and thousands of different things, and say it's all, you know, there's no proof that they work. That is, I think,
lumping all of it into the bag. Not every lemon is sour, it's not the best analogy, but...
So we have to take it, I mean, at worst, we have to take it on a case-by-case basis. We can't write it like a 10-paragraph article and say supplements don't work.
Right.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, let's take one more question before we go to part two.
Well, let's see here. Oh, speaking of which, more about supplements. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Lutein and zeaxanthin, this is from Jan.
Mm-hmm.
Lutein and zeaxanthin are carotenoids often included in eye supplements. Do these isolated carotenoids cause an increase in cancer risk? Beta-carotene studies have shown an increase in cancer risk. So is it the same with these others as well? Do we get enough of these phytonutrients by eating plant foods like green veggies, carrots, tomatoes, sweet potato, watermelon? Thank you in advance for your response.
So, you know, there's something to be said for this argument because it is clear that eating fruits and vegetables has a health protective effect, a dramatic health protective effect. And I in a new article I'm going to talk about the difference between fruits and vegetables, eating fresh fruits and vegetables, and just putting them in a pill, you know, like powdered fruits and vegetables. But I think if we isolate some of the components, such as promising components like resveratrol and EGCG, lycopene, turmeric, and, you know, these are some of the active compounds that make a difference in the fruits and vegetables that we may derive benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work out when it comes to beta-carotene.
Mm-hmm.
Beta-carotene, at least in some studies, and I think we have a question about smoking coming up in part two, that beta-carotene in smokers seems to backfire. And that doesn't necessarily mean that beta-carotene is not protective in some people, because there are a lot of positive studies on beta-carotene, but they really got freaked out when they gave Finnish smokers who were at high risk for lung cancer beta-carotene alone, without balanced supplementation, and many of them perhaps were also alcoholic, because those nights are long in Finland, where they did the study, and they drink a lot of Jägermeister or schnapps there, you know, really hooch. So when you combine, you know, bad liver function with beta-carotene, which is a vitamin A-like compound. And
precursor to,
and it's an antioxidant, but smoke can turn it into a pro-oxidant. It turns bad. So that's what this person's talking about. Is that going to happen with lycopene? I don't think so. Is it going to happen with the mixed carotenoids? I don't think so. It has this, it's never shown up in any research, and I've done, you know, they've done research on those supplements. And, you know, most of the studies either say that the effect is negligible or beneficial, but not harmful. I mean, there are probably some studies that show that there's negative studies on anything, you know, but that doesn't mean that there are studies that show harm. I really think the safety is without question.
Yeah. Jan, I would continue to take your eye supplements, but I would also...
Lutein, which is what
lutein. Okay, right. But I would also encourage you to continue eating your green vegetables and your tomatoes and sweet potatoes and so forth and so on. So continue eating your vegetables and fruit.
And lutein was validated in the ARID study, which is a pretty big study. They didn't find harm with it, and they found benefit in terms of enhancing the macular pigment, which protects against macular degeneration. So it gives you nice orange pigment in the back of your eye, which actually protects the rods and the cones from damage.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you, Jan.
Okay. So let's pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. And when we return, what are we going to tackle?
Speaking of a smoking question, my husband's a smoker. What is a list of vitamins that you could provide for me that I can give him to protect him from his smoking?
Well, Leila, I suggested, you know, I met him, he seems like a nice guy, but he's a smoker, so I suggest you get, you know, you just got married, right?
Yeah. No, this is an email we got.
Oh, this is an email.
Is an email we got.
Because you said it in the first person.
Right, because I'm looking here. Oh, here we go. This is from Barbara. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll tackle that question in part two. This is our weekly Q&A with Leila. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Leila Mudin, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We'll be right back.